Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Hello and welcome to the Adam Ruins Everything podcast. I am your host, Adam Conover. You guys might know I host a show on True TV called Adam Ruins Everything. This is the podcast version of that show. On the show, I talk to awesome experts from around the world of culture and knowledge and science and history and such things. But on the TV show, I talk to them for like 90 seconds. On this podcast, I talk to them for 45 minutes, an hour. You guys have heard the show by now. You know what it is that we do, and that's the premise of the show. So before I tell you who our guest is this week, a couple of reminders for you guys. Adam Ruins Everything is back on the air on True TV. Please catch all new episodes every Tuesday at 10 p.m. or find clips and full episodes at truetv.com/Adam Ruins Everything and the Watch True TV app. And even bigger reminder, I am going on tour this fall. We are taking an hour of all new material, all about America's messed up election system and weird presidential history to 15 cities. We're going to Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, San Diego, Phoenix, Dallas, Austin, Houston, Brooklyn, Washington, Philadelphia, Detroit, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, and yes, even Chicago. If you heard your city on that list, go to adamconover.net to find tickets and come see me. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to laugh a lot, and I'll give you a big hug because you came to the show. But let's talk about today's amazing guest. My guest today is Tamara Hugh Butler. She appeared this very last evening, the eve of today, on the football episode of the TV show, where she told us all about myths about dehydration and hyponatremia and all that cool. If you didn't see the TV show, we're going to blow your mind with what you don't know about how much water you should be drinking. It's going to be crazy. She is a professor of exercise science at Oakland University. And in addition to that, she's also a doctor of podiatric medicine. Can you believe that? She's a doctor of foot stuff. Incredible. And she's also an avid runner and just a really interesting person. Let's go right to the interview. You guys are going to love it. I am here with Dr. Tamara Hugh Butler. Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm so happy to be here.
And thank you for doing the show and telling us all about the myth of hydration and all of that.
It's a great story.
Yeah. Well, before we get to it, I just want to know a little bit about you. You have two PhDs, is that correct?
I'm a doctor of podiatric medicine, and then I am a PhD, and I got my doctorate in exercise science at the University of Cape Town in South Africa.
That's fascinating. Why South Africa? Because you're not South African.
No, but I followed the guy who first reported hyponatremia, people drinking too much.
And really?
So, yeah. So at that time, we didn't know if it was like salt loss or it was like drinking too much. And my data had shown people were drinking too much in a marathon. And so everyone's like, no, you're stupid. And so actually, I went down with the guy who first said it was drinking too much. And then so we did a lot of research
and
together.
And he was in South Africa?
He was in South Africa.
Got it. Okay. So you went there specifically
for him
to study with him and to do research with him. And that's where you got your PhD in sports medicine or sports science. Sports science. Sorry.
That's it.
Got it. But before that, you were a podiatrist.
Correct.
Or a podiatrist, or did you studied podiatry, or were you a medical podiatrist?
So it's a doctor of podiatric medicine.
Okay.
This is a weird story. So anyway, I treated mostly runners because runners have a lot of foot problems. So I was in the medical tent of the marathon, and that's when we started seeing these people drinking too much.
Oh, yeah. Wait. So let's break out the story a little bit more. You were a podiatrist, and you were in Houston. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you were helping with the marathon there in the medical tent.
Correct.
And you saw what happened?
So, in Houston, everyone's like, oh, it's so hot. You have to drink a lot because you don't want to be dehydrated. You know,
very, very hot climate. And marathon and running is extremely like intense. And so, yeah, people are I mean, I've run a marathon myself in just once, very slowly in 2011. I was in very bad shape and I felt really bad about myself. And I realized that running a marathon was the easiest way to get the maximum praise from everybody that I knew, that like, because it's hard, but all you really have to do is sort of show up and do it. Like, you have to put in the miles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
it's tough, though.
But it's very tough. Oh, yeah. It's not easy in that it's not simple, right? It's physically difficult, right?
Correct.
But you don't have to be good at it in order to do it.
Right.
That's what I liked about it. I ran a marathon in almost 6 hours.
That's okay.
Thank you for saying so.
That's awesome.
That's so nice of you to say. I've literally, when I've met other people who run marathons, I tell them my time, I've had them laugh in my face before. They go, 6 hours. I was multiple 90-year-olds beat me, I think, in the New York City Marathon in 2011.
But you succeeded. And
yeah.
That's the biggest thing why it attracts so many different people, from the people who are trying to like win the marathon, like 2 hours, to people who like want the challenge and the accomplishment. And, you know, to be honest with you, it's actually far harder to be out there longer than I think it is for people who are out there shorter.
So interesting. Actually, you're right, because I ran for longer than everybody else.
Well, no, there's people who ran like far longer than you did.
Those elite, that's true. But now that you think about it, those elite Kenyans who ran the whole thing in 2 hours, they were only out there for 2 hours. I was out there for six.
Right.
I ran three times longer than them.
Right.
I'm three times a better endurance athlete than who won that year? It was Meb Kelfezi his name is.
Yeah. He's a god.
So I'm very much an amateur runner, but I like to run. And I know that when you're doing it, you get so much advice about how to be fueling your body, because it's really this game of, you know, mindfully fueling your body and making sure you have what you need,
right,
to some extent. And so you're constantly being told to hydrate,
right,
make sure you drink enough. There's water stations every mile. They say, make sure you drink water at every single one, et cetera. And so, but you saw something very startling at the Houston Marathon, I understand.
Right. So it was interesting because it was the Houston, they started a beginning couch to marathon program. And it was so popular. Because,
that's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, it changed people's lives. But the thing was, you know, in these beginning things, you're right, everybody's telling you what to do. And so in Houston, everyone was telling them, you need a drink, you know, you can't be dehydrated, you know, dehydrated is evil, you know, you're not going to finish if you do that. So everybody just kept drinking, and it was amazing. So during that first year, it was hot. People were coming in and they started having seizures. And
really?
Yes, they ended up in a coma. And what we found out is like, they had hyponatremia treatment, and we didn't know if it was they were out there.
So people were coming into the medical tent with seizures and serious conditions, like going to the hospital.
Correct.
And you found it was, or you suspected at the time that it was because they were drinking too much water?
Well, we didn't know what it was back then. Mm-hmm. But then then we took everybody who was in the medical tent, and we sent them a questionnaire. It's like, how much water were you drinking during the race?
Oh, yeah.
And so the people who got this condition, hyponatremia, low blood salt, mm-hmm, they were drinking like 80 to 100 cups of water during the race.
Wait, now, really?
Yes. You look at me crazy, but their mindset was, I didn't want to become dehydrated.
Yeah.
And so,
because everyone tells you that's the big,
that's a big thing that's going to make you like drop dead.
Now let me ask, because I think this is a question a lot of people have, and we tried to touch on it in the episode, but I almost wish we'd been able to give it more time. A lot of people think that, you said you're in Houston, it's very hot, right? A lot of people think that you need to hydrate in order to keep your temperature down. We associate those things together.
Correct.
Is there an effect where drinking water helps you manage heat, or no?
There is.
Oh, okay.
Because the main way that humans keep themselves cool is, mm-hmm, we sweat.
Okay.
And so when we sweat, we lose water as well as salt. And so you do need to replenish the water so you can continue to sweat.
Okay.
But again, it goes back to in the episode. If you know, we've got that mechanism called thirst.
Yes.
And it's just built in for millions of years. So it's there for a reason. You know, we don't need apps. We don't need people to tell us. It's like right in, you know, in that brain. So.
Right. Well, it's a funny thing, because I think when you're doing, like, my experience of you know, marathon running, mm-hmm. right? And again, I only did it a little bit, but my experience is you do kind of need to monitor, for instance, your calories to a certain extent, right? Like you sort of need to go like, all right, I'm going to need to eat more than I think I do because I know I'm going to be burning a lot, right? But you're saying with water, you don't really need to do that. You can literally just say, I'm thirsty, time to drink, and you'll be totally fine.
But we have those sensors. Even mm-hmm. we have a glucostat sensor
oh, really?
Too. Yeah. So, you know, you hear people, oh, low blood sugar.
Yes.
You know, when you start to crave things that are sugary. So again, this is the theory that's panned out from scientists is that when you are a beginner, mm-hmm. you actually don't know your body's signals mm. as well as someone who's been running like 70 miles a week, you know, mm-hmm. runs a marathon mm-hmm. every couple, you know, couple times a year. They kind of know their different signals. Like a mother knows their baby's cries.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens in the marathon is people get tired because they're unfit. And they think, oh, I must need sugar. Oh, I must need water. And so it's the miscues that people have been telling them that makes them try to do all these things because they're tired because they haven't trained as much.
Got it. So in fact, you think beginning runners tend to worry about it a little bit too much? Or
I think beginning runners don't trust their bodies
hmm.
as much as people who've been running for a long time. They mm-hmm. kind of know when they're thirsty or if they know that, you know, if they're thirsty, they drink and they're okay.
Yeah.
Or even too, like, you know, when you start to get run down in sugar, you'll crave that, you know, mm-hmm. and you'll take that Coke and you'll go, oh my God, that just felt so good. And then you'll take some more. So same thing with thirst. You know, you're just like, you don't want any salt. You just want water. You take that in and it just feels so good and it makes you feel better. So again, too, by learning your body, by training, you understand your cues and what you need and when and what you can tolerate. Some people can't take the foods and they can take different drinks, certain foods mm-hmm. without getting like stomach cramps. So it's the experience factor.
Yeah, so you have to have the experience of knowing what your body needs in that situation.
Correct.
So do you think that there's so much, like, again, you know, my experience, like, you know, doing very amateur level endurance running, but I think with sports all across the board, there's so much information that people are being bombarded with
right.
about, like, you need to take this or you need to take that. I mean, if you pick up a copy of Runner's World, it's basically 100 pages of, like, health advice of, like, you have to do this, you have to do that.
Right.
If you don't do this, you don't do that, you're going to collapse, you're going to be, you know, sick, etc. Is a lot of that information not good or...
I think, you know, so you're talking about internal cues.
Yes.
You know, listening to actually being in tune with your body of what you need versus external factors. And so I think, you know, we're smart. Humans are smart with our big frontal cortex. And so we think that we can second guess our body. And so with all these, oh, you know, this is going to give you an edge. You need this protein and you need this, like, mm-hmm. PM drink, this AM drink, and you need this rule here. And so again, too, it is trying to sell product.
Yes.
But everybody wants that edge. You mm-hmm. know, everybody mm-hmm. does, from the elite ones, from the beginning ones. And so, you know, we take that all in and we calculate, okay, this is going to make me run faster. And we actually then listen to the external cues more so than listening to the internal cues. And I think that's what's happened.
I see, because we get so obsessed with trying to optimize our performance and, like, looking at information from all these different factors that we end up sort of overriding our own ability to listen to
right.
our bodies.
Right.
That's really interesting because, I don't know, like I said, when I got started running, I remember I read a lot of books. I mm-hmm. bought like 3 or 4 books and I was reading blogs and stuff like that. And then, yeah, I did kind of realize that if I just, you know, made sure that I, you know, that I wasn't on a totally empty stomach mm-hmm. and if there was water around and I was just sort of being reasonable about it, that I never got too fatigued, that I never really, like, ran into a problem.
Right. And I think it's okay to start with a plan and be as educated as you can.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also okay to, like, abandon the plan and then say, okay, you know, that just doesn't look good. I don't want to take that glass right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you should be okay. I think we're really built for scarcity. We're really built for mm-hmm. not having water, for not having food, for not having glucose. So all of those mechanisms are really, really ingrained in mammals and animals and humans. But we're not built for excess.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have a lot of mechanisms when we drink too much, when we eat too much. We just we don't have those because we weren't built for that.
Because you're, I mean,
I think evolutionary biology is like a little bit tricky of a – you always want to be careful about telling too much of a just-so story. But it's a lot more common if you're on the plains or whatever to be low on water than it is to drink
too much
water.
Yeah.
So we have a more finely tuned sensor for that.
Correct.
Is what you mean. So, yeah, you're right, because I've often had the feeling of being
– bloated.
Thirsty. Well, thirsty.
Okay, good.
But less often have I had the feeling of, I'm drinking way too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll have like, my belly sloshing around, but okay, so because here's the real question. Can you describe in more detail like what hyponatremia is? Like, because you said, is it too much water? Is it too little salt in the blood? Like exactly.
Hyponatremia, by definition, is hypo is low, natremia is blood. So it's a low blood sodium concentration. So it's a concentration that matters. So generally, we regulate our body between 135 to 145 millimoles of salt per water. So again, too, you think about rocks and rocks and water. So it's a concentration. So that's where our body, between 135 and 145, where all of our cells are this like perfect size.
Yeah. Because, I remember this from high school biology. It's like when there's, when they get too much or too little water, they like shrink or expand and
absolutely.
They can sort of like blow up almost.
Right.
If they blow out.
And they burst. So that's why it's so important to keep that blood sodium level between that range. And so your body fights for that. So what hyponatremia does, that's too little salt in proportion to water in your body. And so what that does is it makes all of the cells in your body swell. And so that's why it's really, really bad. It's bad because they swell in the brain and they swell in the lungs. And so people die from hyponatremia or low blood sodium concentration because actually their brain swells too fast and it runs into the skull and it runs out of room.
Wow.
And so it pushes your brainstem out. Yeah.
Ooh,
bummer.
Ooh, ooh,
yeah.
It gives me a little bit of sympathy pain. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So that's why it's bad. But again, too, you know.
So what happens is, just to make sure I'm understanding correctly,
yeah.
you sweat out water, and so you need to replace that water when you drink.
Correct.
But then if you drink too much water, you have too much water per amount of salt.
Right.
The ratio is off.
You dilute it.
You dilute it. So the problem is really the low amount of salt compared to water, but it's the drinking the water that caused the problem.
Correct. And also, so this is where it gets a little confusing. There is also like salt that comes out in your sweat.
So you're losing salt.
So you're losing salt as well.
Got it. This is getting very detailed into the biology of it.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
But so we talk about, you know, on the show, we talk about Gatorade and other sports drinks. Mm-hmm. And I've heard them say, we have, you know, salt in our drinks and that helps prevent hyponatremia. Is that the case or?
Correct. But so again, we talked about how much salt is in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like 140. So Gatorade has 18.
Oh, geez.
Millimoles. So
okay,
if you think about it has a lot less. So it has some, and it's better than none, but it's not a lot. So it's not like, oh my God, I'm replenishing all the sodium I'm losing. You're not.
Yeah.
You're just, there's still so much water in it that negates it.
So your body it's 140 parts per amount of water.
Correct.
Right? But if you drink Gatorade, which is 18 parts per water,
correct.
That's still less sodium per water. So you're still messing up your ratio. Like you could get hyponatremia if you drank a whole lot of sports drink too.
Right.
Got it. So if you need to replenish salt, like should people just be eating table salt or is that?
Well, I mean, I think during something that's generally less than 12 hours and it's not that hot, I mean, your body compensate and generally you will actually crave saltier things if you need it. So the salt, the sports drink, you know, do we need that much salt? Maybe if you're exercising for over like 12 to 15 hours, like some hot Ironman triathlon, some of the 100 mile races, I think it's very helpful. But like even a 6-hour marathon, you're going to adjust for that. What's going to happen, like even like within the next day, you're going to crave things that are really, really salty and it's going to taste really, really good for you. And then you'll replace it. So do you have to replace it like automatically right on the spot? No, you're going to compensate for that. But over time, you're going to bring that back. And that's how we're made. So, you know, if it tastes okay, that's fine. People put salt in drinks because it does make you, it's like taking peanuts with beer. The salt actually attracts water, so it'll make you thirsty, so it'll make you drink. So it's not always a bad thing.
Got it. Okay. Do you think that because look, in our research for this episode, mm-hmm. we went and we found some examples of, you know, water companies, drink companies mm-hmm. saying, hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. Yeah. We also found a lot of examples of just not even corporations, just groups, you know, or governmental organizations or like magazine writers just saying, hey, hydration is so important. You must hydrate. You must drink 8 glasses of water a day, which I think we understand is a myth.
Right.
And so it just seems like it's, you know, we have some myths on the show that are very much promoted mm-hmm. just by an interest group
company.
Of one kind.
Right.
Yeah, a company, interest group, the government, some sort of group like this. This seems to be something where it's like the whole culture has gotten this idea
Correct.
About hydration, and it's a health tip that people are constantly giving to each other,
right.
but unnecessarily. Is that correct?
I believe so. I believe that we don't need that much water, so much more that we're always having to pee. I think now I just read this 30-day water challenge.
Oh, what is that?
So people are supposed to drink a gallon of water every day for 30 days. And so I was reading these blogs of these people who did it, and
yeah.
they're just like, it was really hard to keep drinking that much. And then all they do is like they had to be in close proximity. So if you drink too much, generally, you know, the body comes and you just pee.
Yeah.
So, you know, are you flushing out your toxins? Are you flushing out those kidneys? You know, the data doesn't show that that's great unless
yeah.
you like have kidney disease. So we don't know where that started, but it's everywhere.
So this is just
everywhere.
People who've gotten some idea that drinking that much water is going to be good for them in some vague way, and they're doing it as almost like a cleanse.
Pretty much.
But there's no science behind doing that.
We really. Haven't had the good science no. that supports that it's good.
But you said, and I just want to make sure we're clear mm-hmm. about this, if you're not exercising and you drink that much water, you just pee it out. It's when you're doing endurance athletics and you drink that much water that you're going to have a problem. Is that the case?
Yeah. So when you're exercising, you know, your body goes into this like above, like when you start jogging, we call it like 50% VO2 max. What happens is your body says, oh, we need to conserve. And so the main way that we get rid of excess water is we pee.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
that's how I generally do it. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you exercise above 50% of VO2 max, your body says, oh no, we need to conserve water because we're sweating, and it stimulates antidiuretic hormone. And so if you drink too much during exercise, you can always pee that out like you can at rest. And that's the difference.
So it sounds like if we're just talking about hyponatremia, like mm-hmm. when it's dangerous, it sounds like it's maybe that amateur runner who's going on a really long endurance run but doesn't know their body's signals, but then they've heard this advice, you must drink as much as possible. And so since they're running, their body turns into that antidiuretic, mm-hmm. like stops the pee from happening.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that experience. I remember running a marathon. After a while, you stop peeing.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, wait, well, I don't have to pee anymore. At the mile one, I had to pee 3 times.
Uh-huh.
But now mile 20, I'm not. I haven't peed in hours. Right. So but then if that person is also drinking water, that's when they can actually really have a serious medical problem.
Correct.
Wow.
And people can die. And they
yeah.
have.
Yeah. There are more than 0 cases of people dying from this, right?
Correct. But I want to make a qualifier because I had some Ironman triathletes,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Kona, and,
oh, yeah.
and they're like, oh, if you exercise for over a period of time, so for a marathoner, if you're over 4 to 5 hours, you get in trouble. But Ironman triathlons, they take, you know, over 12 hours to finish. And
yeah.
so some of those fast finishers will get it. It's not always
really?
Like the slow Ironman triathlon. So actually, we see it more in the faster ones. So it's like kind of more the length of time.
Got it. Okay, interesting. I'm here talking to Tamara Hugh Butler. I'll be back in one moment, so stick around.
Hello, and welcome to Podphone. What type of podcast are you looking for?
You have chosen funny podcasts about bad movies.
Rated R. May we recommend The Flophouse.
3 friends talk about bad movies and make each other and you laugh.
Rated R. The Flophouse is playing at your ears.
If you download it right now or whenever.
Rated R. To purchase tickets to The Flophouse, you don't need to do that. Just download it. The Flophouse, rated R for nudity, I guess.
Welcome back to Adam Ruins Everything, the podcast. Hope you enjoyed the promo for a different podcast, but now we're back on the podcast you clicked on. I'm here talking to exercise science professor Tamara Hugh Butler, who appeared on last night's football episode of Adam Ruins Everything, the TV show. So for that person who's going out to do their first marathon or their
yeah.
first endurance sport, what's your very brief advice in terms of hydration? What should they do?
Drink when they're thirsty.
Okay.
Whatever beverage is appealing to them.
Okay.
So, like I said, in South Africa, you know, we had mostly Coke and water. We didn't, you know, there were some sports drinks, but, you know, that was the mainstay there. Here we have all these different sports drinks, but, you know, not you can't tolerate them. So if you drink when you're thirsty, I mean, that's the safest route.
Yes.
And again, too, whatever is appealing to you and what you can tolerate is going to be it. So again, too, it's like the crutch. People are like, no, but I don't want to be dehydrated. And that's the really hard part that no one wants to let go of.
So in South Africa, you would drink Coke as in place of a sports drink.
Yeah, because of sugar. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
I remember when you told me that the very first time on our first phone conversation when we were researching this topic, and I was like, oh yeah, wait, yeah, what is the difference between Powerade, Gatorade, and Coke? It's mostly marketing, and one's got bubbles in it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's, like I said, to give them credit, there's a little bit of like sodium and a little bit of like other things in the others. But, you know, how does it help you? Maybe, but probably not as much as the marketing says.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Huh. That's so interesting. So, and then in general, just getting back to the culture at large, like people's just general everyday fear, people will walk around and go like, oh no, I'm worried I'm getting dehydrated. I need to drink a lot of water. People carry big Nalgene's with them, or it's like this whole, you know, I think if you look at American society now versus 30 years ago, people are thinking a lot more about how much water they need to be drinking.
Right.
Do you think that's an exaggeration? Do you think they need to not worry about it? Or
I think it's a culture, and where it started, mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to say, but you know, even back in the day when we started marathon running, I mean, you were tough if you didn't drink anything. I mean, so you had to like find it. You had to find like hoses, and so now that we have a lot of it, and when you get tired, you think, oh, it's there. Maybe I need to drink some. So, but it is a culture. So even my students who are always drinking the bottle, and the bottles like have like timers on it, so it tells you how much to drink. You know, I say drink when you're thirsty, and they say, I don't know what thirst feels like. It's because they're always drinking, so they never get to that point. But if I take away their bottle and I put them in the heat chamber and make them exercise, by like an hour and a half, they're just gonna, I mean, that it's so strong that that's all you think about. It's like, I'm stopping, you know, I need something.
Yeah.
You know, they can.
You sound like you have a lot of power if you can force people to get in a heat chamber and exercise. Is that part of your work? Is that something?
Yeah. And athletes are cool because they love their bodies. They want to find out more. So, they, you know, they're there like, you know, take blood and urine. So it's been fun to work with that.
Wow. So what is your like day to day, you know, how do you conduct your research? Do I guess you take athletes in and you have them exercise and how what does that look like?
So depends on the project. So if I do my hydration, so actually we were looking to see if sweat was regulated, sweat. Mm-hmm. If the amount of salt in your sweat was regulated. So actually, you know, we gave them a drug. One was a placebo and one actually, you know, blocked antidiuretic hormones, so they kept peeing, and the other actually stimulated. So, like, you know, we'll give them a drug. We say, get it on a treadmill, and they'll, you know, we don't give them any water, and they have to run for an hour, and then we have to collect pee. We collect sweat.
Is this legal to do? This sounds very.
And we don't pay them. You know? Oh my god!
You're gonna pee. You're gonna run.
And you're gonna spit.
You're going to the heat chamber. Oh my god! This is, and people sign up for this.
Yeah, and so this is the worst part. So we still can't get a good way to measure how much sodium is in sweat. So they say the best way is to actually, we put them in a tub and we have to actually pour distilled water on them. And then they have to like, you know, take all of their clothes off in this tub. And then we have to like, then they have to get out of this tub and we swish it around. And then we take a sample to try to find out. And then, you know, it's like, you know, but it's an adventure.
Yeah, that sounds like an adventure, mostly for them, not so much for you. I think it sounds like an adventure.
It is, but they know that hypernatremia kills people, and so they're willing to do that.
That's amazing. Here's a question I have about sports science in general.
Okay.
I hope this doesn't offend you at all if I say it, but I have a vague understanding of it as being one of the fuzzier sciences, one of the ones that's like that more bad information comes out of than maybe, I don't know, like physics or something like that, right? And I think part of that's because the reputation of, you know, the Gatorade Sports Science Institute and all this kind of thing, you know, where it's like a lot of sort of weird incentives, you know, but you know, how rock solid, you know, are the findings that sort of come out of it?
Humans are messy.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing is it, we're all different. We're all an experiment of one. So physics, math, chemistry, you know, you solve in a mathematical equation, you just need to do it once and it works all the time.
Yeah.
With humans, you know, we'll test like 20 people and that's like, okay, 60% of these people got hyponatremia and others. So, you know, even in clinical medicine, we can say not one cure is always going to cure something. And so, you know, you just have to bat the percentages. And then, you know, so people are just different. And we do studies on real people. There's just a lot of variables that come in. People are like, you know, I'm not just not going to exercise that long. Or
especially in when you're talking about athletics, because people's abilities and bodies are so different when it comes to athletics.
Like
I remember when I started running, I was like, you know, I was doing a bunch of races to train for the marathon, and a friend of mine joined me, and he was like, okay, let's run a – he's like, oh, this seems like fun. Let's run a half marathon together. And I was like, all right, I'm going to smoke him because I've been training for a year, and this is his second race or whatever. Yeah. And he beat me by like 45 minutes or something like that. And I was like, his default body is just so much better than mine. I'm never going to be able to compete with him.
Right.
This is why – it doesn't matter how bad I want it or how hard I work. He's so much, you know what I mean?
Like, right.
Our bodies are so different that we are fundamentally different when it comes to this sport.
Right. So when you do these exercise studies, even clinical studies on a bunch of humans, there's just going to be so much variability that we just can't account for.
Got it.
So even too, I did some rat studies, and they're like rats that are all, you know, related and bred, and you stick rectal probes in them, and you put them in a, you know, give them drugs, and you put them in a freezer, and then you kill them. So that's,
I hope you don't do that to the human subjects too. After you take them out of the tub.
No, they don't.
And you put them in a freezer and you kill them. You know.
Yeah, they don't let me do that. You know, if I could, I might think about it. But
oh yeah, it says you're a former PhD.
That's
what
right,
happened?
That's
oh, you
right.
killed some people. Oh wow. Okay. So
yeah.
I'm just kidding.
No, but that's true. So that stuff is clean and it's beautiful. But how real is that?
Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah, we found that when we were researching this topic and we're talking about the myth of 8 glasses of water a day, I asked our research department, well, okay, how much water are you supposed to drink a day? And they said, and you tell me if this checks out with your work there, they said there is no recommended amount of water to drink per day because it totally depends on the person.
Right.
And the number of variables are so huge you can't even say, oh, well, it's how much you weigh or how tall you are or you know, what color your hair is. It's just everybody has a different amount and they just need to see when they're thirsty.
Right.
Wow.
No, and you know, and no one wants to hear that. But, you know, if you put me and you put you and everybody in through here, I'm in Michigan and where it's negative 20 and, you know, you're in California. I mean, just the size difference, the metabolic rate, the ambient temperature. And so it's even going to change during the day.
Well, of course.
So, you know, we first gave like blanket guidelines, even for running, you know, 600 to 1,000 milliliters every hour. But that just doesn't work for everybody all the time.
Of course, if you take the same runner and they're running in, you know, somewhere humid like Miami versus, I don't know, the desert, Joshua Tree or something like that, they're going to need to drink a totally different amount anyway.
Right.
Wow. Of course. That's so obvious to me now.
That's how we were built, you know?
Yes.
So
that's why... That's why rather than looking for some specific guideline, how much should I be drinking? Let me get a bottle with a timer and with a measurement. And so I make sure I'm drinking the right amount or drinking a gallon every day or something like that.
So it's going
to
change.
Your body is attuned to what it needs at any particular time.
Correct.
It's its own measuring device for how much water you should be drinking.
Right. And so one thing I want to say is people say, oh, when you're thirsty, it's too late. No, that's like – it kicks in when you're like in that middle ground before like you're going to die. Mm-hmm. So how it does is when your cells like start to shrink down to a certain extent, like you know how like raisins do, that signal of that shrinking, it your body like actually detects the change in the size. It says, oh my God, it's shrinking. We need water. And that's how it knows. It has to know in real time. It's always like, you know, testing it. Or then like there's like little receptors in your heart. So if you have less blood that's circulating, it's going to go, oh my God, less blood circulating. We need water. And then that's how it knows. And it knows it like all the time in real time. It's like always as we're sitting here just like monitoring that.
That's so beautiful. Your body is so finely attuned.
It's fantastic.
Well, is there ever a danger of people's, like, just for instance, in this conversation, we're talking about water so much, I'm getting probably thirstier than I would otherwise, right? Like, I'm like I have a water here, and I'm like, I got to get some because we're talking about water so much. Do people end up ever screwing with their own, you know, receptors of, you know, their own thirst receptors because they are thinking about it too much, or they're, you know, or the marketing has gotten to them or anything like that?
I think what the data is starting to show, and I'm just going to take that water away from you,
I'll pee it out.
is sometimes, like, if you're drinking too much, it actually changes the receptors for vasopressin. So if you're drinking so much, you'll get less receptors, so you're going to pee out more. So there's different things. You know, if you drink a lot, you'll pee out more. And if you don't drink a lot, then actually you have more receptors and you'll retain more water over time. So your body does adjust. It's, like, amazing how it works. And we just try to outsmart it all the time. So for the most part, it works whatever we do. But we just think that we're superhuman and all these things are going to make us better.
Yeah, it's interesting. So is it that people are looking for a solution to make themselves superhuman? Like, that's why they sort of seek out this advice they don't need?
Yeah, everyone wants to get better. From the 6-hour marathons to there's something on the New York Times, you know, can a human break 2 hours in a marathon?
And, yeah, like, I saw that.
You know, what's all the science? You know, can we do it? So everyone's looking for that, just that little edge. And I don't know if you're going to – I think there's a big zone there, but –
It makes me think about how much power coaches have in athletics.
Yes.
Because I've heard about studies where, you know, coaches are able to get athletes to do things that they wouldn't have been able to do otherwise because they're encouraging them and they're
right.
And they're telling them, you know, push harder and, you know, fuel your body with this or that. But that also gives them so much power because if they then have power over the athlete and
right.
they could actually incline them to injure their bodies.
Correct. So again, the kids are on scholarships, mm-hmm. you know, the high school kids, you know, you trust your coach. And, you know, I study collegiate athletes. You know, you're not going to not do what they say because that's your scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So even like a high school, so you look for the coach to know everything. And so you're going to do whatever he says or she says. And I think that is, it's very much powerful. But it goes back to we're listening too much for the external
mm-hmm.
Cues. Even the parents are up there, you know, drink, buddy, you know, don't cramp.
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing. So the kids, I think, are more vulnerable because the influence of the coaches, the influence of the parents are very, very strong. The kid does not want to disobey.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
Yeah, it's so strange. I mean, you know, there was that kid a few years ago who
mm-hmm.
who passed away after drinking like a gallon of water and a gallon of sports drink.
Yeah, or four gallons.
Four
yeah,
gallons
yeah.
of the mixture
two and
of
two.
The two
yeah.
in a day or in a
Correct.
Practice.
Yeah, because he had cramps and they said he needed to drink. So he did.
Yeah,
high
because
school.
Because he heard about that from
coach.
Yeah. And I guess because that's the culture of it as well, but
yeah.
That's such a it's such a shame. I mean, do you feel that it almost seems sometimes that the sort of thing that you might hear from a coach, especially in like a high school or like a local level, is you know, some of it might almost be like hearsay? Is that or it seems like that would be a concern, right? That you would sort of have bad medical advice being passed around from, you know, dad coaching a team to dad coaching a team. You
right.
know, is that a concern at all? Or
yeah, I mean, so again, going back to like. Water and the culture, it's just so ingrained, and we don't to try to reverse that. Just people just think you're crazy
mm-hmm.
because, you know, no, my coach said that and it worked, my parents say that it's worked, my friends do that, it works. So trying to reverse that, trying to go back to, like, you know, hey, when you're thirsty, bringing ourselves back from, you know, evils of dehydration, now there's evils of overhydration. We just need to get back to the middle. And I think again
mm-hmm.
too, it's just we need to spread that culture and try to dispel the myths, and you're doing a great job of trying
well,
to like bringing these myths out and making people actually think about where they got this information from and thinking about understanding why drinking too much might be dangerous. And there's good, not that people don't need to drink, because they do, but, you know, there just
yeah.
needs to be a balance. But it's, you know, these myths that are still out there, and they're just really hard to change.
So it's sort of getting away from the culture of obsessively learning all these different facts about you must do this, you must do that, you have to think about this, or you're gonna, you know, pass out, and more just back to the culture of like, hey, take it easy, listen to your body, you don't, you know, obsess too much.
Right. No, that's really, really hard. You know, because they're, you know, and you know, every time people's like, I'll give this lecture, and then they're like, well, how much do I drink? And how much salt do we need? And so it goes back to the, everybody wants a formula.
Yeah.
And
well, here, let me put, just because, you know, I know you're a runner yourself.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And so this is unrelated to hydration, but it's something else that I'm curious about. There was the whole thing, and it was happening as I got started running, about minimalist running shoes mm-hmm. and about how the old model was that you and for people who don't know, this is going to sound so abstruse, but I swear that it was like this information is
passed on.
Is passed yeah. on and just like projected at yeah. you so forcefully when you start running is that when you run, your foot will either roll in or out, it'll pronate or supinate mm-hmm. and you have to wear a special shoe. You got to go to the shoe store mm-hmm. and run on a treadmill, and they'll analyze your gait, and then they'll give you a special shoe that's like a prescription for you to run, right? And then that book Born to Run came out, right?
Right.
Which was that guy who said you should run like you're
barefoot.
Like you're yeah. a Native American yeah. or Native Mexican in the desert, and you should run barefoot wearing nothing.
Right.
And that's the best way to run. Or you should wear Vibram Five Fingers.
Right.
Right. And so I read that book and I was like, this is a little fishy, but okay, I won't buy this special built up shoe. I'll get a slightly more minimalist shoe. Mm-hmm. Right. That was what I did. Mm-hmm. But other people were like, read it and they're like, I got to get Vibram Five Fingers.
Yeah.
I'm going to start running with nothing on my feet. That's the best way. I'm just going to be like El Blanco Caballo yeah. or whatever the guy was in the book. And I'm going to run ultra marathons barefoot. And then we found out that a lot of those people seriously hurt themselves. Right.
Right.
And Vibram, I think, lost a class action lawsuit over it. Or something along those lines. There was certainly some kind of court settlement. So I guess my question is, what kind of shoes should we – what kind of goddamn shoes should I be wearing? Because both of them seem very wrong.
Well, you know, that's a funny question too, because that goes into my podiatry background. So I did that like all the time. So actually, I'm a big believer. So if you have a high arch foot, you know, it's called a supinate foot. It's really, really hard. And so you need a really, really soft shoe. You know, you always need the complement. And so if you have like a lot of pronation, you got a little wobbly foot, you actually need a stable shoe. So a shoe can actually make or break you, because there's like millions of shoes out there. So too, with Vibrams, you know, that may work for some people. People who are light on their feet, who've never worn heavy shoes, you know, their midfoot or their forefoot striker, it's good for them. Even like Africa, you know, they still don't wear shoes. So if you've mm-hmm. you've trained that way, it's okay. But, you know, for a person who's like heavy pronator, 200 pounds, oh, take a Vibram, you know, it's not for everybody. So again, it goes back to, you have to be – everybody has to find what's going to work for them.
Uh-huh.
And again, too, so going to these running shoe stores, having experts – look at you run and placing you in different shoes to complement your foot type, I think that's going to save you.
Because really?
You go,
okay.
Yeah. So if your friend goes, no, I like these, like, whatever, and you're like, oh, and you get that, you know, you may have a different foot type, and it saved him injuries, but it may completely give you injuries. So again, it has to be individualistic. Some people can run with the barefoot shoes, but some people, I mean, they're just like, they're not.
Got it. Okay. I was totally convinced that, and again, it's because I got my scam sensors up. I always was convinced that the treadmill in the store was like a thing that they had set up in order to, you know, like, was like a sort of pseudoscientific way of classifying people, but in order to sell shoes, but there is really validity to it.
There is some, I say there's some validity to it. And again, you know, what worked for one person don't work for the other. And for me, like barefoot, I mean, okay, then just run barefoot. Don't buy 100 pair of shoes.
You don't need 100.
To run barefoot. You know, I mean, just think about that. I mean, yes. Run barefoot, but buy these 100, you know.
Buy these $100 barefoot
shoes.
I thought I was supposed to be barefoot.
Right.
No, but you need to spend $100 to run barefoot.
Yeah.
So. What kind of shoes do you wear?
I wear, so, because I'm a podiatrist, I know that I'm soft. I wear like these, I need a lot of cushions. So there's different Mizunos and Nikes. I just like them because they have a lot of cushion in their light, because I'm very, very small. But the thing is, a shoe has to be comfortable, like right off
yes.
the back. It's not going to like, oh, it's going to like wear it and never wears it. So you should always, you know, wear it and then go running around the block and see yeah. how it feels like when you're running.
Is it a matter of trial and error? Like, oh, wait, I got a little foot pain. I should maybe try a little bit of a more minimal shoe,
So you go in and have someone who's kind of an expert, like look at your foot, look at your run, and then try mm-hmm. that shoe. And then it's kind of like trial and error. So again, people who are really, really flat too, who should be in a like a motion control, they actually do well barefoot if they run on their toes, because then their foot never flattens because they're always like on their toes. So it is trial and error, but to have a little bit, someone who's knowledgeable at a knowledgeable running shoe store, that's going to help.
Okay. But some of the people at the running shoe stores aren't that knowledgeable, right? Some of them are just like teenagers who watched a video once, right?
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. I totally give you that.
Not everyone at the Foot Locker like knows exactly what's up with your
No,
with your
they go, you like red? Here's some red.
I mean, it's just so funny how if someone wants to start running, you know, it feels like they're immediately bombarded by recommendations for how best to do it. Like, even the last time I needed to buy new running shoes, they discontinued the old ones that I had. And I tried to find new ones that were similar. And I just Googling them, it's like Runner's World best shoes of the year. And there's like 100 of them. And they've ranked all of them. And it's like, wait a second, this just seems like it's a marketing arm for the shoe companies. Like, it's like there's all of this information that seems like it's coming from at cross purposes.
And it changes every 3 months. I mean, so even to try to keep up with it. So, and then you'll make a shoe, you'll be in a shoe and you like it. But actually, this is the trick, though. You actually then go to these like online shoe warehouses. And if you know a shoe worked for you, they'll sell the older ones too.
Oh,
but again, too, you don't have to try it on. You know, you can't go like, oh, like 8 out of 10, rate this a 5. You got to go in there and see how it feels for you.
Yeah. You actually need to put it on your
foot. You need to put it on your foot. You need to run around. You have to get it fitted, you know, because the size are different. If you wear a 6 in a regular shoe, you're going to wear like an 8 in a running shoe. And people are like, no, my feet aren't that big. But, you know, you just don't even go by the number. You have to go by the feel.
Wow. So is there any movement, getting back to like hyponatremia hydration a little bit, is there any movement to, you know, get the misinformation out of sports and to, are like the, are any of our sort of national athletic groups, like, you know, trying to correct this misconception, considering that it's actually killed people?
I mean, we've tried. So, you know, we released a new consensus statement, and that was in the summer of last year.
We being?
There were 17 of us, and we were, like, from all over the world. And so we were, like—
Different scientists.
Different scientists who study this the most. And so we made these recommendations. And it was actually a conference that CrossFit had sponsored. And so, so, you know, when that, But anyway, so I mean, that came out. It got a lot of press. You know, people like you will pick on things. So we'll get like, we try to get it out as much as we can. But it seems like grassroots seems to be working the best. Because people read that, so we're trying really, really hard. But we don't know how else to do it. I mean, there's been like blogs and tweets and other podcasts. And, you know, it's reaching out to other athletes and just trying to get the word across. But again, too, you're going against the grain of what everybody believes.
Yeah, everybody, literally everybody believes hydration is a dire threat and we must drink water all the time.
Right.
But hopefully, I mean, the beautiful thing is that the message that you have and that you sort of, you know, expressed throughout this whole interview is that really all you need to do is like be careful and listen to your body and don't freak out too much and you'll probably be fine, right?
Right. Because if you need water, you'll be so thirsty, and that's the only thing that you'll think about.
Yeah.
But in this day and age, unless you're out like out in the desert, it's always going to be everywhere, and that's fantastic. but just because it's out there doesn't mean we have to take it like all the time.
Yeah, what's funny is that the Nalgene wasn't invented back before indoor plumbing. Like, people weren't carting around gallons of water with them back then. But now that there is water literally available, we've started shipping water everywhere, carrying it with us all the time, like inventing bottle caps that remind us to drink every hour, stuff like that. It's crazy.
It is. Well, to think, you know, bottled water is like this multi-million dollar. And it's water. It's water in a bottle.
Yes.
You know? And then, you know, think about all the pollution that we're from all these water bottles. And so, so when you think about it.
We're carting water around by truck when it already comes to us by pipe.
Right.
It's so insane.
Yeah. So unless you're in Flint, which I'm close to Flint. It's amazing when you think about people are buying bottled water and then you get all this marketing for water. So
yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for the work that you do and for coming in and talking to us about it.
Hey, thanks so much for doing a great show and trying to get the word out in a really fun way that people like relate to.
What I always say is the whole purpose of the show is to take the work of scientists like yourself who are, you know, finding these things out and try to spread them as much as we can, you know, in order to dispel a couple misconceptions. So it's like, to me, you're the hero and we're just trying to spread the word.
Because we're like nerds. We don't know how to do it, you know, so we need people like you to like help us.
Oh my God. Well, thank you so much for coming by, Tamara.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thanks once again to Tamara Hugh Butler for coming on the show. I hope you guys loved that as much as I did. She is such a charming and delightful little person. Don't you just want to give her a hug? I know I do. Okay, that was Adam Ruins Everything, the podcast. We will be back in 2 weeks, so please tune in and tap on the podcast then. Our producer is Shara Morris. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app, and don't forget to leave us a rating or comment wherever you subscribe. And again, Adam Ruins Everything, the TV show, is back every Tuesday night, True TV, 10 p.m. Watch it, DVR it. If you don't have a TV, clips and full episodes at truetv.com/AdamRuinsEverything and the Watch True TV app. And once again, I hope you're still listening because I gotta remind you again, I'm going on tour and you can go to adamconover.net for tickets and showtimes. Not adamconover.com. I was stupid and I didn't register it in time. So adamconover.net is my URL and that is where you're gonna go to find tickets and showtimes. Okay, guys, see you in a couple weeks. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.